Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, chapter entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha, text number 2. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Vidura said, O great sage, what did Swayambhu, the dear son of Brahma, do after obtaining his very loving wife? Text number 3. O best of the virtuous, the original king of kings, Manu, was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead Hari, and thus it is worth hearing of his sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I am very eager to hear. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. In the absolute world, there is no difference in quality between the Supreme Lord and his pure devotee. Therefore, hearing the topics of the Lord and hearing of the character and activities of the pure devotee have the same result, namely, the development of devotional service. Omagyan Timadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kaupat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Yevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasa Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, what is the title of this chapter? The Appearance of Lord? Varaha. Okay, so who is the first incarnation that we hear described in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Yeah, Varaha Deva is the first appearance of the Lord. Krishna was there in Canto 1, at the end of Canto 1, chapters 11 through to 16, around about there. Then it describes Krishna in Dwarka. It describes Krishna and Arjuna pursuing Ashwatthama. So Krishna appears. It's not his Jamma Leela, not his appearance Leela. Just turn it down a touch, it's reverberating. Just go down. So it is not, this is the first time that we hear of an appearance of the Lord. It means a Jamma Leela of the Lord, a divine appearance. Krishna says in the Gita that the Lord's appearance is divine. What is the verse that describes that? Jamma karma chame divyam. When Krishna appears, or when he acts, then it is divine. It is under the daivi prakriti. It is not material. It is not material activities. Anything that Krishna does is not material. Even if it appears to be material, it is not material. It's under the influence of the pleasure potency, the daivi prakriti. So, this is the first time that we're hearing about one of the Lord's incarnations. He appears. So what is significant about this? Why does he first choose to come as Varaha? He is a boar. What is significant?
He invades the Lord Brahma had manifested in Vedas.
Yeah, he had manifested. Yeah, that was a little before. That's Matsya. That's going back a little bit before. The Bhagavatam is not chronological. That's an important point to understand. The Bhagavatam is not chronological. If you look at the Bhagavatam's pastimes, it jumps significantly. You know, 1 minute we're in a particular yuga, then we go back to another yuga, and we go back to another kalpa. You know, and things are mixing continuously. So the Bhagavatam has a thematic theme. There is a theme which is running through the Bhagavatam, or a philosophical thread. So that's what we need to connect to and pick up on. And Prabhupada said, if you make a systematic study or a categorical study of the Bhagavad Gita, because it is spoken systematically, we have to understand that, even if it appears to be unsystematic, because in terms of chronology, in terms of time frame of the universe, it's not systematic. You know, if it was systematic, we'd go back to the creation of Brahma, and then we'd work back down. We'd say, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. But the Bhagavad Gita is not spoken like that. So it is not a systematic or chronological description, but there is a philosophical thread which runs through the Bhagavad Gita, which we have to connect to. You must connect to that thread, and you must understand the progression that the Bhagavad Gita makes. So the Prabhupada says that if you get to the end of the ninth canto, you should be a God-realized soul. You should fully understand God. You should have divine intelligence and divine consciousness. And if you understand God at that point in time, then when you read the 10th canto and you meditate on the pastimes in the 10th canto, you will see Krishna in his full glory. Or you'll understand him fully in his original form. So the Bhagavad Gita is leading to this. So then why does he come first as a boar? Because it is significant. A boar is a low-class animal. In terms of the animal kingdom, it's a pig. They live in sewage, they eat stool. So the Lord first appears in what appears to be one of the lowest forms in the material world. Because he's showing us right from the beginning, do not confuse that my body is material. Krishna is showing us from the very beginning, he's not material. This is not an ordinary boar. It's a divine boar. The boar is all attractive. The great sages offer prayers to this boar. When he appears, he manifests, and then he comes from the, we'll hear later, he comes from the nostril of Brahma. Right? These things are all mystical. Right? Why does Krishna do these kind of things? Yeah, to cause confusion. That's why Krishna does these things. Why would he come out of someone's nostril? Now, here's your first child. Right? Out of your nostril is a manifest. Why does he do that? Because he wants to confuse the atheists. You say I cannot be God. This is all extraordinary. We cannot accept this. People can't accept this. You know, take this book. Right, and go and knock on the next door, just walk out the front of the temple, walk next door, knock on the door, and say, my dear sir, he gets up in his pajamas, right, and he says, my dear sir, God is a boar, right, and he just came out of Brahma's nostril. Right, Brahma has four heads, he just came out of his nostril. So, and the man will say, which nostril did he come from? Right. There's eight nostrils to choose from. Which one did he come from? Not that. No one's going to believe this. So Krishna wants to confuse the atheists. Also in Krishna's final lila, his Ancha lila, or when Krishna disappeared from this world, how did he disappear? It's spoken of at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita. How did Krishna... There was a fratricidal war between Krishna and his relatives, the Yadav dynasty. No one can destroy Krishna's family members. No one can destroy Krishna and Balaram, and no one can destroy his family members. So the only way that they could disappear is if there was an infight between the dynasty. So they went to Prabhas Chetra, right, which is down the coast from Dwarka. They went out to Dwarka, they went down the coast, it's a holy place. They went down there, they did some jagya, and then they drank some soma ras, everyone got intoxicated, and then they began to fight with each other. Right, and then they picked up weapons and they destroyed each other. Right? And the acharyas say it was just yoga maya anyway. It didn't actually happen, it was just like a vision. You know, they don't all fight. Why are Krishna's family gonna fight? They all love each other. The Lord's eternal associates, why are they gonna kill each other? It's just a mystical display, just so that everyone in the material world will say, oh, they destroyed each other, right? They're gone now. He needs to have a Jamma Leela. This is one of the differences between Krishna's Bhauma Leela and his eternal Leela in Goloka. One difference is there's no Jamma Leela in Goloka. Right? Krishna doesn't appear in Goloka. Krishna is always Kaishora, which means he's always 16 in Goloka. Right? There's no appearance. But in this world, there's a Jamma Leela. When you read the first chapter of the 10th canto, first three chapters, you hear about the Jamma Leela, where Krishna appears. Right? So that is necessary because otherwise it's very confusing. So there has to be an appearance of birth and there has to be an appearance of disappearance or death. Right? Because otherwise there's no normality. So then they have this fratricidal war, and at the end of the war there's only one person left. And that's Krishna. So what does Krishna do? Right? He looks around, right, and he says, oh, my whole family just destroyed themselves, they're all gone. And what do you do? When you're faced with death, what do you do? What's it? Lament, yeah. Some people lament. What do we do? We cry. No, what do we do? What should we do? Right? You become, yeah, chant the holy name. Thanks, Tila. Just elevated the class to a divine. Yeah, it's true, actually. But when you're faced with death, you become very introspective. You go very deep within yourself. Because this is your final examination. It's your final test. So what did Krishna do? Krishna went under a banyan tree. So he went under a banyan tree, sat down. It says small banyan tree. Why is it a small banyan tree? Because our universe is the smallest universe. There are many universes in this creation, but ours is the smallest. Our Brahma has four heads, Chaturmukha. Whereas the other Brahma, as you read in the 10th canto, they have so many heads. But this universe is just tiny. We're the last one to come out of Mahavishnu's paws. We're the last one. And then we're the first one to go back in as well. That's why we're considered, we're the smallest universe. Our duration of time in this universe is very short. The others have been coming out and then going back like that. But we just go back in. So, he goes under a small banyan tree, sits down to meditate. Right? And then what happens at that time, two people come. One is called Uddhava and the other one is called Maitreya. Yeah. So Uddhava was ordered by Krishna. Krishna said, go to Bhadrika Ashram in the Himalayas. And what Krishna discusses with Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto is the Uddhava Gita. That's the conversation which Krishna and Uddhava have just before Krishna leaves this world, before they go to Prabhas Chetra. And then he says, now go to Bhadrika Ashram and repeat this to the sages. But when he hears that Krishna has gone to Prabhas Chetra, he's on the way to Bhadrika Ashram in the Himalaya, he turns around, he comes back, and then he meets Krishna. And he sits down and then they have another conversation. And what's the conversation they have? That's the conversation which is here in the third canto. This is the final conversation that Krishna has. So Maitreya, he's sitting on the side. Uddhava and Krishna are sitting opposite each other. And Maitreya sits on the side. Maitreya listens to the whole conversation. And what we're hearing now is Maitreya repeating that final conversation. So it's interesting. What does Krishna speak? At the very end before he leaves. Well, he speaks about creation of the material world. Because you must analyze this philosophy, especially the third part of this creation, which is described at the end of the third canto, is called Sankhya. So what does Krishna, what's his final message to us as he leaves this world? Become Sankhya yogis. Analyze this world and see it for what it is. It is false. The Bhagavatam says, the first verse of the Bhagavatam says, the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam is to understand the difference between spirit and matter. Or Maya and reality. Spirit and matter. The body and the soul. So this is Krishna's final message to us. Don't be bewildered. Don't be bewildered by Maya. Don't be bewildered by your material form or the forms of others. But become liberated in consciousness. That's his final message. Which is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. That's the first message in the Bhagavad Gita. Asochanam vasochastvam. You sound learned, but you are a fool. You don't know the difference between matter and spirit. First thing Krishna says, and then what's the last thing he says before he leaves the earth? The same thing. So then, Uddhava goes, and Maitreya leaves, and then it's just Krishna, and then what happens? Krishna's meditating under a tree, goes into a deep state of, yeah, his foot. Yeah. He goes into a deep state of meditation. What does he meditate on? What does he meditate on? He meditates on himself, right? But Prabhupada says he's never alone. So then who's he meditating on actually? There's one particular devotee. Srimati Radharani. And Krishna's meditating on Radharani when? Always. Right? Whether he's in Vrindavan, Mathura or Dwarka, right? He only thinks of Srimati Radharani. And her birthday is? When? Is it that late? Is it? 22nd. Wow, that's late. That's the latest I think it ever gets. Never gets that late. Because Purushottam must have pushed everything right back. So he's meditating on Radha's birthday. Her birthday is very soon. Are you getting ready for her birthday? Are you preparing for her birthday so that she will have a nice birthday? Start preparing now. Prepare your consciousness so that you can meditate on her and give your life to her fully. So, Srimati Radharani, Krishna's meditation. So he goes into a state of meditation, and then what happens? The hunter comes along, right? Looks through the bushes, right? Sees Krishna's foot, thinks, oh, that's a deer, and shoots it with an arrow. Krishna becomes mortally wounded by the arrow which goes into his foot, and he leaves his body. Right? He just survived a whole battle, right, with his whole dynasty. I mean, if there's a battle, if there's just been a battle, there's not going to be any deers around anyway. Yeah, deers don't, you know, sit down and watch, you know, the fight. You know, the deers, there wouldn't be any deers. What's a hunter going to be doing, walking around after a battle scene? Right, Krishna's just survived an entire battle. You know, his family members were trying to kill him. Right, most powerful warriors on the world, on the earth, Satyaki, you know, most powerful warriors. Krishna, Mataji. Have to be quiet. You're in the Bhagavatam class. So, Krishna has just survived all of this, and then one arrow comes and hits his foot. He's just gone through the whole battle of Kurukshetra, where it's described that he was shot numerous times by arrows in the battle. Right? It appears that he was bleeding. Krishna doesn't bleed, because it says in Brahma Samhita there are no veins. But for the purpose of Leela, he was shot many times. So he gets through a whole battle. You know, if you read the 10th canto, he's fought every demon in the universe. He's destroyed all of them. And then a hunter with a little arrow shoots him in the foot, right? And Krishna, oh, it hurts so much and he dies. Right? You can take so many arrows on the battlefield from, you know, Bhishma himself, the most powerful warrior on the planet, shooting arrows into him. But, you know, one arrow just kills him. So then Krishna apparently leaves a corpse. Why? To confuse the atheists. They say, see, he's just an ordinary person. He's just like us. No? He's just like us. I mean, he happens to be blue, but he's just like us. And he happens to have 16,108 wives, but he's just like us. Each wife has her own palace, right? And each palace is 4 square miles in diameter. Add that up. Right? Right? One palace, right, is 2 miles wide and 2 miles long. Right? One palace. So how far is that? It's about 3 kilometers, right? Roughly. 3 kilometers. So that's from here. What's 3 kilometers? That's like from here to, you know, Kingsway. Yeah, Crown Casino. Right? From here to Canada, that's Krishna's palace. Right? One palace. For one wife. And there's 16,108 of them. So add that up. How much area? That's like from here to Dandenong Ranges, out past Werribee. That's like, you know, it's everything. It's practically the whole of Melbourne. It's just Krishna's palaces. And that's just his wives. That's not all, you know, Ugrasen, you know, and all of the members of the Yadav. They all have their own palaces as well. And then it says that Dwarka is 96 square miles. That's the diamond of Dwarka. So how do you fit all of that within Dwarka anyway? It doesn't fit. But he's just like us. He's just the same as us. He died. He got shot by a hunter. He's just like us. He leaves a court. Obviously, he's not like us. But if you take this story to the man next door, right? It confuses people. And that's Krishna's point. That's why he does all this. So why does he first appear as the boar? He appears as the boar to confuse everyone. Right? Manifest first. I am a boar. Are you going to worship me? Are you going to bow down to me? Is there any boar in India that you would bow down to? Any pig that you would bow down to? Maybe the pigs in Vrindavan you would bow down because they are exalted. But you don't bow down to a pig, you don't worship a pig. But the great sages, when the boar appears, then the great sages, they all begin to offer prayers, Purusha Sutta and other prayers to the boar. You are the source of everything. And then, when the boar has hair, so when the boar shakes himself, because he just goes down into the Garbhodaka ocean, picks up the earth, and when he comes up, and he shakes off all the water from the ocean, and it's like in the morning, we do Prabhupada's arati, or we do Radha Balabha's arati, the deity's arati, and then we throw the water, which has been offered, and then when it falls on you, you feel purified. I'll just make a point though. You know when you have that, what's that called, that thing?
The sprinkler,
yeah. When you have the sprinkler, the water disseminator, the system is, it's been lost now because of a lack of culture. The system is you're supposed to stand at a distance. Yeah, it's there. Okay. So everyone knows what I'm talking about. You're supposed to stand at a distance and throw it, and it's supposed to sprinkle. These days everyone comes and stands like CC just for you and goes, God. It's not very pleasant, when you get this whole, I know it's purifying because, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, it's freezing cold, it's 4 degrees outside, and someone just comes just pours cold water on your head. It's supposed to be from a distance. That's cultured. That's the way it's supposed to be done. And these days everyone goes like that. It's like, it's not very, you can do it like that. That's purification. We take it like that. But it's not the cultured way of doing it. The cultured way is you stand at the distance and throw it like that. When I joined, that's how we used to do it. But now we've got the system, every single person gets I think we get extra mercy now. That's the system. It's not the system, actually. It's not the way to do it. But anyway. So when the Lord, when he shook his hairs, and then that water sprinkled, and it hit the sages and the demigods, and they felt that was the most purifying water. Whereas we know if that happens in India, the boar gets out of the sewage, and he walks past you, and he goes, like that. It's the most disgusting experience. Everyone's like, stand back. No one wants to be near them. So so the first appearance that he has is as Lord Boar. Why does he come as Lord Boar? Because he's showing us, I am divine. Right? Worship me. Right? So you have to get past. All these things are obstacles. They're meant to create confusion. Krishna likes to create confusion. Because he's testing us. Are you actually sincere? Do you actually believe in all this? Or do you fall asleep in Bhagavatam class? Do you actually believe in all of this? So that's why the first time he appears, the first lila, Jamma lila, in the appearance lila, in the Bhagavatam is Varaha. So, there are 10 subject matters in the Bhagavatam. What are the 10 subject matters? Canto 2, chapter 10, verse 1. Saga Visarga, we hear about creation, sub-creation. There are various 10 subject matters which lead to Ashraya, Mukti Ashraya, which is the final subject matters. And then it is described that one of the subject matters is description of the Manvantara. Manvantara means the Manus, the progenitors. So here, we're also hearing about the appearance of the first progenitor. not the first progenitor in the universe, but one of the major progenitors. His name is Swayambhuv Manu. Now, he's significant because his dynasty will be spoken, this is Canto 3, so Canto 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, all the way to the end of Canto 7, it's just describing the appearance of the descendants of Swayambhuv Manu. So it's like our genealogical table, or the history of this universe. It's our family tree. So who were the five children of Swayambhuv Manu?
Two sons and three daughters.
Two sons and three daughters. What were their names?
Uttanapad
and? Priyavrata. Uttanapad and Priyavrata. Okay, famous, those two. And then, what were the three daughters' names?
Akuti,
Prasuti, and Devahuti. These are the three daughters. So, of the three, Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti, Devahuti gave birth to, or Kapila himself appeared, which is at the end of the third canto. Kapila's teachings are very significant. Prabhupada, there's a book which came out in the 70s, The Teachings of Lord Kapila. Prabhupada's lectures on that. It's a very important section of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is what Krishna spoke just before he left, Sankhya. He analyzes very deeply the difference between matter and spirit. So it's very important to understand. So we're hearing now about Swayambhuv Manu. Now, in this verse that we read today, we're hearing about verse 3 says that if you hear about the Lord or the Lord's devotees, it is the same. This is an important point to understand. It is the same. My spiritual master, I asked him a question when I was a new devotee. And he said, he wrote back, and he said that whether you glorify the devotee or whether you glorify the Lord, it is the same. And Prabhupada teaches this. Prabhupada also says that his purports are more important than the verses of the Bhagavatam itself. That's a powerful statement. That Prabhupada's purports are more powerful, or more important, you could say, than the the verses. Because the verses are very terse. Terse means very, they're sutra. There we have this term Vedanta. What does Vedanta mean? Veda anta. The end of knowledge. Vedanta. So you have the Vedanta Sutra. What is the Vedanta Sutra? Have you heard of this book? Vedanta Sutra. It's the last thing that Vyasadeva wrote, actually. Vedanta Sutra means the end of the Veda. Vedanta means the conclusion of the Veda. Sutra. Sutra means verses which have a deep and profound and, how do you say, elaborate and, I'm trying to think of the word. When you put a lot of something into one thing. Condensed, yeah, it's nice. Condensed, very condensed. There's a huge amount of philosophy in the Vedanta Sutra. Right? The Vedanta Sutra, it's actually a very small work. There's not many verses in the Vedanta. Does anyone know how many verses? Anyone remember? It's very small. It's not a big work. It's a small book. But it has the entire Vedic philosophy within that small book. A sutra is something which is very concise, right, and very small. So the sutras, the Bhagavatam is full of sutras. Each verse is a sutra, 18,000, and it has very concise amount of philosophy, a deep amount of philosophy within each verse. But Prabhupada says the purport is more important because we would not understand. You could read the verse, but without Prabhupada's purport and the purports of the previous acharyas, it doesn't become illuminated. You need the illumination of the commentary. So Prabhupada says the commentary is more important. So Prabhupada explains that to hear about the Lord or to hear about the Lord's devotees is equal in every respect. If you read the Krishna book or you read the Prabhupada Lilamrita, they are the same. They have the same potency to purify your consciousness. Just like there was one devotee a few years ago, his name was Nirguna Prabhu. He left his body in Mayapur. I arrived in Mayapur. He left in Kartik, actually. He might have left on Govardhan Puja, I think, which is extremely auspicious. Just like that devotee left his body during Purushottamas, Korma Rupa Prabhu. So Korma Rupa Prabhu, he dedicated his whole life to Care for Cow program in Vrindavan. He established it. He began the program. Don't fall asleep in the Bhagavatam class. Very important. He began the program because he took a Kartik Vrat. He lived in Vrindavan. He was a brahmachari, like a senior brahmachari. He took a Vrat that every day for the month of Kartik he would feed cows. And that was his Vrat. So he did his Vrat very nicely. And every day the cows came and he fed them very nicely. And he spent money on feeding the cows. And then what happened? The day after Kartik finished, all the cows came. And then he thought, oh, but I finished my Vrat. But then he thought, that's not the purpose. The purpose is not, oh, I'm doing a Vrat so I get purified. The purpose of bhakti, like sometimes we do bhakti for that reason. You know, I remember when I first became a devotee, we used to have Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja feast upstairs, right? There was the whole upstairs was full, and everyone would sit down in lines, about 400 devotees, right? And this is back, the early 90s. And we'd serve out, it took 2 hours to serve out all the preparations. We'd save everything from the night before, from the Janmashtami day, and then we'd serve out all the maha. It took 2 hours, and the brahmacharis, that was our service, and we'd serve everyone out. So sometimes some of the brahmacharis would say, oh, if we serve everyone now for 2 hours, we'll get so much benefit. You know, but that's not actually why we do these things. Right? When a mother feeds her child, she doesn't think, oh, I'll feed my child and I'll get so much benefit. No, she feeds the child because the child needs love and devotion and affection. So when we do our bhakti, so a lot of the time, it's about us. Oh, I will do this vrat because then I will get purified. Right? Oh, I will do this service because it will purify me. But that's not bhakti. Right? It's not against bhakti in the sense, Jiva Goswami explains this. It's not against bhakti in the sense that it's helping you to advance, at least you're doing the right thing. But it's not bhakti. It's not pure devotional service. Bhakti means I'm only doing it for Krishna's pleasure. For the pleasure of Krishna, the Guru, the Vaishnavas, that is devotion, that is bhakti. So when we do our service, then we're meant to be doing it for Krishna's pleasure. So Korma Rupa Prabhu, after serving the cows for 1 month, at the end of that month, then he thought, now I have to keep serving them because they keep coming. So he developed this whole Care for Cows program. It's a huge program in Vrindavan. So he left his body for doing that service. That's the most important service you can actually do. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaycha. Prabhupada explains, the cows are more dear to Krishna than the brahmanas. It's the topmost service, actually, to care for Krishna's cows. And that the ugra karma, or the negative karma which is developing on the earth at the moment, is for that one reason, because cows are being neglected. I read yesterday, America alone slaughters 33 million cows a year. And that's only America. 33 million a year. That's only America. So, and you know, it's not even the biggest. Australia kills more. And India kills more than Australia. So this is the biggest problem on the earth at this point in time. So because he dedicated his life to caring for the cows, he left his body in Purushottamas. It says if you're born in Kartik or you die in Kartik, it's extremely auspicious. And if you Purushottamas, which comes in once every 4 years, and they say it is worth hundreds of Kartiks, he died in Purushottamas on the Ekadashi. Right? In Purushottamas. It was amazingly auspicious. And the top astrologer in ISKCON, Shamananda Prabhu, Prabhupada Dasavi, he cast the chart and he said the time that he left was extremely auspicious. So this all comes from caring for the cows, or for doing this special bhakti seva. So, a few years ago I was in Vrindavan, and this devotee, Nirguna Prabhu, he was leaving his body. And I had the good fortune, he left in Kartik, in Mayapur, and I think it was Govardhan Puja. It was an extremely auspicious time that he left. And I got the good fortune, I got there just when he, just before he left this world, and I had the opportunity to massage his feet, because he was dying from cancer. So he was in a lot of, his body was in a lot of discomfort. So devotees would come every day and we'd perform kirtan for him and massage his feet. And so Hari Sori Prabhu, his service every day, he would come for the final months before Niguna Prabhu left this world, and he would read Hari Sori's diary, which is Prabhupada Lilamrita. Right? And he would just read for a couple of hours, 1 or 2 hours every day. And Niguna Prabhu would just sit there and he would just listen, just meditating on Prabhupada. Right? So the point is, the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains, is whether you hear about the pure devotee or you hear about Krishna, it is the same. It's not different. Whether you read Prabhupada Lilamrita or hear Krishna's pastimes, it is the same. You get equal benefit. So when we're hearing the Bhagavatam, this verse is explaining that we're just about to hear about Swayambhuva Manu. Who is Swayambhuva Manu? Right? He's a pure devotee of Krishna. So whether you hear about it, the Bhagavatam is full of descriptions of pure devotees. Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj. Right? It is full of descriptions of pure devotees. Right? And in between that, right, then you have descriptions of Varaha, Vamana, Matsya, Kama, Parashurama, Ramachandra, and finally Krishna. Right? So we're hearing about all these parts. So whether you're hearing about the Lord or Lord, it is equally purifying. Because the pastimes are on the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. They are in pure goodness. And the devotee is in pure goodness, the Lord is in pure goodness. And by hearing about the description of the devotee and the Lord's different incarnations, then finally when you hear about Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, you will be purified so that you have qualification or adhikar to hear those pastimes. If you try to approach those pastimes prematurely, right, the rasa, because what are Krishna's most intimate pastimes? Right? It says that Canto 1 and 2 are Krishna's lotus feet. Right? If you look at Krishna's deity form, Canto 1 and 2 represent his lotus feet. Right? 3 and 4 represent, I think, his legs. Right? 5 is, it goes up, right? And then finally it gets to 9 is his throat, and then 10 is his face. Right? 11 is his forehead, and 12 is his crown. Right? So his face is Canto 10, right, is Krishna's face. And what is the most beautiful part of the face? The smile. Right? The smile is, say, when someone smiles, it is captivating. Even if someone's very ugly. It's actually a fact. Even if someone's not very attractive, when they smile, they become quite beautiful, actually. So when someone smiles, you see, when Krishna smiles, it is most captivating. When Krishna smiles, it captivates everyone in the universe. That's why he's called Krishna. He's all attractive. So when Krishna smiles, that is chapters 29 to 34 within the 10th canto. Now, what is chapters 29 to 24? What are they called? Sorry, 29 to 34. What are they called? It's the Rasa Lila. Right? It's the Rasa Lila, which means, Rasa means like the supreme pleasure, Lila, pastimes. The supreme pastimes. If you actually study the Rasa Lila, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary and purports, it's the most amazing pastime for many reasons. It is said to be superlative. Krishna's other incarnations come to watch that pastime. When Krishna does Rasa Lila, right, Nisringadev, Matsya, Korma, well, they're all there watching the pastime. Everyone comes to watch. Even his incarnations come to watch. That's how powerful. And it says all the other pastimes in Vrindavan who personify, like Jula and Yatra, and we're going to have Jula and Yatra soon. That's my favorite festival. Julan Yatra, the personality of Julan Yatra, the personality of Dan Kaley, the personality of all of his pastimes, they personify, they come to watch the Rasa Lila. That's the most amazing of all the pastimes. So to understand Krishna's Rasa Lila, you have to have adhikar, you have to be purified. You have to be free from mundane conception. Therefore, you have to study the Bhagavatam. You have to understand everything in the Bhagavatam leading up to that. So by studying the Bhagavatam systematically and carefully, your heart becomes purified. That's the point. So that when you hear Krishna's intimate pastimes, you will be attracted. And you'll have qualification to enter into them, to hear about them. Otherwise, if you're too mundane, if you're not purified enough, then you will see them as being mundane. You won't see Krishna's pastimes as being pure. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says you will get the reverse, result. Instead of getting rasa, he says you will get virasa, which means you will get mundane lust. If you hear about Krishna's pastimes when you're not qualified, mundane lust will come up in your consciousness. And that's what takes place. Just like Prabhupada, he was staying at one life member's house in India, and Prabhupada was travelling with his disciples, and they were staying in one life member's house. They're very wealthy. And then they had Mangalati. Prabhupada got up with all his disciples. They got up, they did Mangalati in the person's house. And then after the Mangalati, the people, they got up as well, elderly man and woman. So after Mangalati, they came into Prabhupada's room. And they said, "Swamiji, we want to hear Rasa Leela from you." And Prabhupada said, "No, I will not discuss Rasa Leela." But they were
not qualifying.
Yeah. And then they were very persistent. Yeah. You've seen sometimes people in India are very persistent. Yeah. Like, "Swamiji, please, just speak Rasa Leela." And Prabhupada said, "No." And he said, "Please, Swamiji, just please speak Rasa Leela." Prabhupada said, "No." And they're very insistent. And Prabhupada said, "You may be qualified to hear it, but I'm not qualified to speak it." So you have to be extremely quiet. You have to have adhikar to understand Krishna's part. That's why you have to study the Bhagavatam very systematically. So Prabhupada says that if he has one criticism of his followers, they do not read his books enough. So I know myself, I'm increasing my reading at the moment. And I'm seeing the effect of my consciousness. You have to read Prabhupada. If you're not reading Prabhupada's books more, then read more. Yeah. And if you say, "I don't have time," Prabhupada said, "Eat less. Sleep less." Prabhupada said that. Devotees say, "Oh, Prabhupada, I don't have time." Prabhupada said, "Eat less. Sleep less." That past time I told with Guru Kripa Prabhu. I've told that past time before. Prabhupada's in Vrindavan. Translating, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. Prabhupada's the only one up. Everyone else is sleeping. Prabhupada's translating. Prabhupada rings his bell, right? And Satsarup Maharaj, he was sleeping outside Prabhupada's room. He's Prabhupada's servant secretary. Wakes up. Prabhupada rings bell. He comes in. Offers his basin and says, "Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "Get Guru Kripa Swami." It's 2 o'clock in the morning, right? So he goes off in the dark. Finds Guru Kripa Swami's room. Knocks on the door. Guru Kripa Swami comes to the door. "Prabhupada wants to see you now." ISKCON was very heavy back in those days. "Prabhupada wants to see you now." So, okay. So he comes into Prabhupada, took a bath, comes into Prabhupada's room, comes in, offers the basin, just sits up. Prabhupada's translating. Prabhupada just kept translating. And Guru Kripa Swami sitting on the other side of the desk. After a few minutes, Guru Kripa Swami said, "Prabhupada, you called me? You asked me to come?" Prabhupada said, "What were you doing?" He said, "Prabhupada, I was sleeping." Prabhupada said, "Why are you sleeping?" He said, "Prabhupada, so I can do my service." He said, "Why are you not here translating Bhagavatam with me?" Guru Kripa Swami said, "Prabhupada, you're a Paramahamsa." He said, "Why are you not a Paramahamsa?" And he said, "Go and take rest." That was Prabhupada. Prabhupada would say to his disciples, they'd say, "Oh, Prabhupada, I don't have time." Prabhupada would say, "Eat less, sleep less. That's what I am doing." So if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to get serious. It's a serious movement. Would you have joined if you knew what it was actually like? The reason I joined, I walked in here, first time I walked in here, the reason I joined was to be peaceful. That's why I joined. Because I want to be peaceful. I want to be a monk and be peaceful and like that. And I haven't been peaceful since I joined. Last time I was peaceful was like, you know, years ago. Just like we sent that girl, we always send our woofers to Melbourne to get purified. So Paola, on the weekend. she said, I want to go to the, you know, the girls came down to the farm. So she met some of the girls. So, you know, and they said, come to the ashram. You know, it's the Hare Krishna brainwashing cult program. Yeah, just come to the ashram. So she said to me, can I come to the ashram? I said, yeah, no problem. Go to the ashram. So she said, I want to do everything that they do. I said, yeah, it's good. You do everything they do. So she gets off of Mangalati. Goes Mangalati, chants rounds, right? Then goes Guru Puja, full morning program. Then after that, then they go into the kitchen. They start cooking for urban yoga between 11 o'clock and 4 o'clock. And then after urban yoga, they go to urban yoga, do the whole program. And she comes back, said she came back at night, 9 o'clock, just hit the pillow and she just went, totally finished. Right? She said, very intense being a Hare Krishna. Yeah, because that was Prabhupada's program. Right, eat less, sleep less, serve Krishna all day. Prabhupada said himself, because Prabhupada was only sleeping 2 hours a night. Right, and Prabhupada said, when I sleep, I feel like it is death. Prabhupada said that. He said, actually, I do not want to sleep. I feel like I'm wasting my time. He said that to George Harrison. He said, I do not want to sleep, but the body needs some rest. Right? So Prabhupada would sleep 2 hours. So all of us should also start sleeping. No, it's not practical. You can't do it. You could try, but you can't do it. Prabhupada went to bed. He was on a train going through in between cities overnight. So they went to bed at 10:30. Tamal Krishnamaraj was in the cabin with Prabhupada. So they went to bed at 10:30, turned off the light. Prabhupada took rest. Tamal Krishnamaraj took rest. And then 2 hours later, Prabhupada gets up, turns on the light. Because that's all Prabhupada did. He just slept 2 hours and he got up. So Tamal Krishnamaraj was in his sleeping bag on the... and then after half an hour or something, he saw the lights on, he saw Prabhupada was there, so he got up and offered his obeisances. Right? And Prabhupada said, take rest. He said, that is not for you. You need 6 hours sleep. Prabhupada could do other things. So we should not try to imitate Prabhupada. We should try to follow him and reduce things gradually. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Okay, so we'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Before we discuss. Yes, sir.
Don't you get a couple of hours of peace every day when you chant?
What's that?
Do you get a couple of hours of peace every day when you chant?
Yeah, I was generalising.
Thank you. One more question. I've been told to serve only when you think you can, to the point that you think you can. Don't stretch yourself too much. And it sounds a little too comfortable for me.
Yeah, Prabhupada said devotees should be happy and satisfied. He said that. There's a famous letter. It used to be on the reception. We used to have it on the wall. It's a famous letter that Prabhupada wrote. He said, devotees should be happy and satisfied. And Prabhupada said that, I am giving you all these big, big projects to keep you engaged because you cannot go to Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. Because you're too much in the mode of passion and ignorance, then Prabhupada gives us all these big projects to keep it. He gives us all this service to keep us busy. But within that service, we should be happy and satisfied. It should be balanced. We should have ample time to do sadhana and ample time to serve Krishna. So there has to be a balance. So yeah, to Prabhupada's idea of ISKCON was not that devotees are stressed. Yeah. Sometimes people come visit our temple and they say, everyone's so stressed. Yeah, that wasn't Prabhupada's vision, that we're all, it's like these, you know. Like I walked into one temple I was in Paris many years ago, it was 20 years ago, I walked into the temple. And as soon as I walked in, the devotee said, Prabhu, can you do aarti? I said, yeah, okay. because there were so few devotees there. I think there was more deities than devotees. It was like that. You know, it was like there was Parashishwara, Krishna Balaram. I can't remember. It was like three. The altar was like this, like as big as this. There was only about six devotees in the temple. Except devotees, they were stressed. It was like, wait the Lord, put the Lord to rest. You know, everything. They just had dirt. I just walked in. Yeah. First devotee I saw, he said, Prabhu, can you do aarti? I said, oh, okay. Like that. But devotees should not be living in a... Sometimes, Prabhupada says in the Gita, he says sometimes there is emergency work. You can't do emergency work for years on end. You know, sometimes you have to fire up. You know, we have the catering jobs and... Yeah, we have to go like, you know, 4 days without sleep and like that. That's emergency because, you know, that's not we do devotional service like that every day. And devotees have to have breaks. You know, sometimes devotees have to go to the holy dharma and they have to rest and like that. So it has to be balanced. That's the point. Okay, any other question?
The current issue is in Australia is domestic violence. Almost one woman are killed every day by their partners or husbands in Australia. I'm not just saying that in Australia, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Prabhupada says in one of his books that degradation of womanhood brings chaos in society.
Yeah.
And in another part of the same book, he says women like to be raped. And he had a heart attack when I read that.
Fourth canto.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah, it's in the fourth canto.
Yeah. So, how does that happen? I grew up with three sisters and a caring and loving mother. So,
yeah.
It's really painful to read that. I really got hurt.
That particular statement, yeah.
No offense to Prabhupada.
Yeah, it is. It's a very, I mean, that's a heavily controversial statement. Heavily One point we have to understand, just to give clarification on that point, is that Prabhupada was born in 1896. And he was educated in Scottish Church College in Calcutta at the beginning of the century. And Prabhupada's English is Old English. Prabhupada's English, the way Prabhupada writes and speaks, it was 100 years ago. We don't speak like that now. Like, you know, when you see someone now, you say, sup. Hey, sup. You know, I see my cousins or my nephew and niece, I say, hey, sup. So, like that. You know, if you walked around 100 years ago and said, hey, sup? No one knows what you're talking about. So the way Prabhupada wrote his books, right, it's different to the way we speak now. So the word rape, Prabhupada's connotation, if you read the passage, it's not like, you know, any woman walking anywhere, you know, a man jumps out and rapes her and she enjoys that, because obviously she doesn't. Right? So... the connotation that Prabhupada's meaning is that a woman in a relationship with a man, she likes to be dominated by the man. And sometimes when the man is sexually aggressive, women like that. It's a fact. It's a psychological fact. Or you ask any woman, they like to be dominated by a man. Someone that they love. Like that. But if he's sexually aggressive, she enjoys that. So Prabhupada's connotation, if you read that particular, because it's there, it's in the fourth canon, it's very controversial, then that's the connotation that Prabhupada's making. He's not saying any, you know, woman walking anywhere and then a guy jumps out and rapes him. Like, oh, yeah, I enjoy that. No.
Especially in the Western world, women fight for their rights,
yeah,
and more than in Asian countries.
Yeah.
So perhaps the solution, what I think is, we start our own political party, Hare Krishna for the political party, and one of the mothers is the prime minister.
Yeah. Yeah. What do I think? I think it's a good idea. In the 1970s, then devotees thought they were going to take over the world. Prabhupada's disciples in the 1970s, they thought we were going to take over the world, because Prabhupada used to preach like that. Prabhupada used to preach, we will conquer the world, and he used to preach like that. So devotees actually thought it was going to happen. So in America, one devotee, I think it was Balavanta Prabhu, he ran for a political seat in America. And here in Australia in the 1970s, Sabhavati Prabhu, who is one of Prabhupada's disciples, he actually ran for one of the elections. And he didn't get many votes, but he actually ran for election. So yeah, devotees can do it if you want to do that. You know, I'll vote for you if you want.
So I'm ready to register for the new party tomorrow. Auspicious day.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to do it, Rabbi, then that's good. Any other question? Okay.
You know how you think that he's practicing a faith to read about the
pure devotee. What should you read first? You can read both simultaneously. The first darshan I ever had with my guru, I've been devoted for about 3 months, and I went to him, and the first darshan I ever had, I said, what should I read? Because I'm a new devotee. And he said, I'll give you 5 books. He said, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada Lilamrita, Krishna book, and Nectar of Devotion. So he said, read those 5 books. And I said, oh, which one first? And he said, all at the same time. That's what he said. He said, all at the same time. And I looked at him like a little, like that. And he said, yeah, if people go to university, you know, they'll study many things simultaneously. And he said, you know, you're at the age where you'd normally be in university. So you can study all those books. So I looked at him, I was still a little bit bewildered. And he said the same thing as what Prabhupada said. Because Prabhupada said that to him. He said, eat less, sleep less. He said, time's there, you can read 5 books at once. Yeah, just stop sleeping. It's possible, you can actually do it. So maybe not 5 all, you know, every day you may not do all 5. I remember though, I was travelling with my guru one time, and he would read, because he was a sannyasi, so he was reading for 2 hours a day. So he was reading 4 books in those 2 hours. So he'd read Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, half an hour each. Like that. I remember he was doing that at one time. So it's possible, you can. It can be. Okay. Any other question? Yes? No, she put up her hands. Just checking. Yeah, it means the skyscrapers were for the royal, the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas would live in big palaces, but everyone else would live on the land. The Kshatriyas would live in palaces, because they have to be powerful. So they build big palaces, they live in the palaces. So when you come to the capital and you see the Kshatriyas, you become, whoa, they're powerful. And they need to present that to society, like, we will protect you, we're powerful. So only the Kshatriyas live like that, no one else lived like that. The Vaishyas lived on the land, the Brahmanas just lived in the forest or in the cottages, and the Sudras just lived wherever they needed to live to serve everyone else. Okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Gauranga. Gauranga.
End of the one.